My ambition after that trip to the Highlands was simply to see if Tasmania could make a really good single malt whisky.
We don't expect everyone to like these wines, so yes, there's some risk.
Drink more sherry, because that's when you can really educate yourself on what happens in maturation.
The thing is with Australian natives, you put them in a gin, the aftertaste invariably is just bitter and unpalatable.
I think the Irish whisky landscape is going to be wildly different over the next 5 years.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits, and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. Established in 2015 at Spring Beach in Tasmania, Spring Bay Distillery is the realisation of a dream for whisky-loving owners Cam and Susie Brett. We've actually heard from Cam a couple of times previously on this podcast, in one of my news bulletins back in 2021, and in the special Lark 30th anniversary episode in 2022. So it's long overdue I invited Cam and Susie on for an in-depth chat about Spring Bay. While it's definitely single malt whisky that inspired their distillery, Spring Bay has also enjoyed success with its gin and vodka, the latter of which was the Australian Champion Varietal Vodka at the World Vodka Awards 2023. Coming up, Cam and Susie will fill you in on some of the other recent developments at the company. First up, though, Susie reflects on their pathway to owning a distillery, having shared a love of whisky for more than 20 years.
Well, I actually lived in Edinburgh in my 20s, you know, backpacking and working. And one of the girls I was living with, her boyfriend, was very into his single malts. We didn't have any money, so we relied on him to educate us. And so I developed a little bit of an appreciation, certainly when I was living in Edinburgh. And then I moved back to Australia and met Cam. And on our first date, I invited him in to have a whiskey. And he thought that, oh, that's pretty, that's pretty promising. And, you know, and so we had this kind of shared enjoyment of single malt whiskey. You know, I'd been working nursing for many years, and so I was looking probably for a bit of a career change. And so we had this sort of drive to create, but create something that we were passionate about, that we loved. And we came up with this idea of, oh, my God, what if we made whiskey? You know, we were definitely inspired by what was happening in the Tasmanian whiskey scene at the time. Sullivan's Cove had won the world's best single malt. Bill Lark had been inducted into the Whiskey Hall of Fame. You know, all these things were happening a little bit later, actually, but sort of there was great momentum around Tasmanian whiskey, and certainly we knew, you know, great single malt could be made in Tasmania. And we were very fortunate in 2015. We'd already laid our barrels down. So basically Cam had known Bill through the tourism industry. We used to run tours going to Lark Distillery, Cascade and Cadbury. They were called Taste of Hobart tours. Cam had known Bill through that and just sort of approached him and said, look, this is what we're thinking. I don't want to bug you. Could you just point us in the right direction? And so we went off to Redlands, it was then, whiskey school, and actually spent a few days learning the craft. And we were just captivated by it. You know, it was just so exciting at the time. It was so cold when we started. I think it was June, wasn't it, Cam?
July's our first cast lay down.
Yeah, and the tap had actually frozen. There was water, frozen water coming out of the taps. We were at Plenty. And, yeah, and then we were very fortunate to go to Scotland with Bill Lark and some other whiskey enthusiasts, and we visited 23 Scottish distilleries in about 2.5 weeks. And, of course, the distilleries we fell in love with were, in particular, the coastal distilleries. So we sort of had a bit of an idea of locations, but it really honed into us, yes, we want to, you know, have a distillery with that sort of coastal influence. That was sort of the start, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I suppose for us, like, we knew that water was the key to making good whiskey. You know, a third of a bottle of whiskey is water, so it's really important for us about the quality of the water. And having had a property at the east coast of Tasmania for over 20 years, we knew that our rainwater there was some of the best that we'd ever tasted. It's always hard going back to a capital city and every time you turn the tap on, you just pick up the chlorine coming out of the tap. But our rainwater is very soft and sweet. And one of the things that we learnt in, while we were in Scotland, was about how all these coastal distilleries manage to tell their story of terroir. You know, as you know, James, on Isla, there's a lot of distilleries quite close to each other, similar locations, but they've all got different stories. They've all got different whiskey. And for us, it was about the spirit of the place. And what we found is that when we had our water, our rainwater analysed, it was certainly potable, but there was a slight element of sea salt that was actually coming through into the rainwater. Not so much to make it taste salty, but it actually just gave the water quite a sweetness and a real softness to it. So we knew that the coast was going to be a really good place to make whiskey, and we knew that we can get the terroir into our whiskey with the use of this slightly salt-infused rainwater.
And so tell me about the location of the distillery, because your cellar door is in Cambridge, isn't it? But is that a different location to where the distillery is?
Well, what we did, James, we actually started in distilling in 2015, and our initial location was Spring Beach, and that distillery is still running today with a cellar door, and that's just south of a small town called Orford. A lot of people would go through Orford on the way from Hobart heading up to the Freycinet Peninsula. Our distillery is almost opposite Maria Island, and that distillery and cellar door is still running today, but what it does is actually been reallocated to just doing our gin now. When we released one of our whiskies, our second release, it was reviewed by the Australian Financial Review and they put it in the top six. And all of a sudden we started selling out of all the whiskey we were making at Spring Beach, which was only about 5,000 litres a year. So what we did is we knew we had to expand. And because we were running the whole distillery on rainwater, we felt that what we had to do was actually expand. We needed town water and town waste facilities to manage the increase in production. So we set up a full grain to glass distillery at Cambridge. So we actually run two distilleries. So single malt whiskey is made at Cambridge. We have a cellar door here. And now the coast is purely gin production. And so what we do now is we actually harvest the rainwater from Spring Beach and bring that back to Cambridge to maintain our terroir.
Right. And so you know that the makeup of that water is different to what you would be using were you just to use the water in Cambridge?
Yeah, so Cambridge, we could run an RO, a reverse osmosis, but we'd end up with a very sort of neutral water, which wouldn't actually have the same qualities of the water that we've been using since 2015. So we, at great effort, we actually bring the water, we harvest the rainwater and bring that back to Cambridge.
Wow, awesome. So did you say that you actually managed to have some whiskey in production before you had your own distillery using other facilities?
Yes. Yeah, so what we did actually under the tutelage of the wonderful Dean Jackson, we actually laid down 15 barrels of whiskey using the what it was then the Redland Still out of Plenty, as Susie mentioned, where we did whiskey school. So I spent 3 weeks distilling with Dean, and we had contract to produce some of our spirit. And what was really good about that, we could actually trial using some of our own sourced wash. In the early days, we were sourcing wash from Moo Brew here in Tasmania, which is where Sullivan's Cove Distillery was getting their whiskey wash, until we could actually build our own wash production facility here in Cambridge. So we laid down the first 15 barrels at Redlands and then transferred across. We'd built our own distillery by then and then started about getting our brewery set up to make our own whiskey wash.
And was that always, I mean, it is quite a common practice in Tassie to purchase wash. Was that always something that you were dead set on, that you wanted to be able to make your own in-house?
I think yes. I think controlling the production from the, as I said, from the grain to glass was critical for us. It's about our provenance, our terroir. And certainly, as you say, in the early days, there's probably only about half the distilleries, I believe, in Tasmania were making their own wash. That number's certainly grown. Now, I think there's something like 85 to 90% of distilleries in Tasmania are now producing their own wash. So it's as our industry's grown, we've seen this growth across the whole sector, both in numbers of distilleries, the size of the distilleries. I don't know a distillery that's actually contracted. They're all been expanding over the years. And I think it's a natural progression for a lot of distilleries to move into producing their own wash.
That's interesting. I think the way that people talk about it, I thought it was a more widespread practice than it actually is.
There are some in the industry that refer to Tasmania as beer boilers, and I certainly take issue with that because it's certainly not the case. And I'm sure if we project forward another 30 years, you know, we've been going, our industry is 31 years old this year in the contemporary time, you'll probably see, I reckon, 95 to 100% of distilleries will be making their own wash.
Now, when you said about starting Spring Bay and producing Tasmanian whiskey, you've spoken about sort of the influence of terroir. What were you thinking about in terms of the Spring Bay-styled whiskies, and how do we create something that's kind of differentiated to everyone else, but also, you know, that's uniquely Australian, uniquely Tasmanian and uniquely Spring Bay?
I suppose for us, when we're starting out, we de-risked the whole distillery by using the best things that we could get. We knew that some of the best stills in the world were being made here in Tasmania through Naplua. Peter Bailey is quite a legend down here in Tasmania. We researched that trip to Scotland was a bit of research. It wasn't just all fun and games with Bill. We actually found that some of the new make spirit that we're trying across the distilleries, the richness and the oiliness of the new make spirit that was coming out of Islay was one of our preferences. And of course, a lot of the distilleries in Islay, most of them, I think, except for maybe for one, has declining line arms in their distillery. So that oiliness that comes through from a declining line arm, we like that mouthfeel. Also means you can actually increase the alcohol percentage, which increases the flavour in your whiskey, because that oiliness sort of helps protect the palate a little bit from the alcohol. So what we did is we got the best stills we could. You know, my plumber was quite cranky with me because he was laying copper pipe everywhere instead of plastic pipe. Kept reminding me that I was paying, you know, 25 times more per metre for our copper piping to run all of our water than if you just put plastic in. We've got three stainless steel tanks for storing our water. Again, that's about maintaining the quality. And so for us, we just went through this process of de-risking. We used the finest Tasmanian barley we could get. We were very careful with our barrel selection. But at the end of the day, when you put all of those things together, the style really ends up choosing you. What comes out at the other end, you can't force a style. I think what happens is that you do your best. You make sure the new make spirit's delicious when it comes out of the still. You choose good barrels. You make sure you keep on top of those barrels as far as running them through tasting panels to make sure they're not in too little or in too late. And if you take those sort of steps, eventually you end up with a style. And as I said, it seems to choose you.
And you mentioned some of the early accolades that you got for some of the whiskies. Are you happy with how things have evolved since then? You know, as you've expanded, are you happy with the take-up of your whiskies?
I suppose one of the fortunate things for Susie and I, we started when we did start. And I mean, I certainly would hate to be starting a distillery now. It's certainly a very competitive space. And I think it'd be harder, I think, to find something unique about your product as there are more distilleries. I think it gets more difficult. But for us, because we've stepped up our production over a number of years, our production volumes have grown with the expansion of our brand. Whilst, you know, the number of awards that we've won is helpful, in the early days, entering awards was more about getting feedback from judges about our whiskey and trying to find, actually the best thing you can get from one of the judges is something negative so you can actually work on it. But we're very fortunate that we won quite a lot of medals early on and sort of continue to do so. Thankfully, you know, we've grown organically, so we don't really have a problem selling our whiskey at the moment, touch wood. And we hope that continues. We haven't seen the full 25,000 litres a year that we've been making here in Cambridge since 2019 come online yet. A lot of those have gone into 200 litre plus casks. And for us, we think they'll probably be about a 6 to 8 year maturation. So probably the earliest we might see some of the bigger volumes coming on will probably be around 2025 to 2027.
And are you starting to see, you know, an evolution of the whiskies in that larger format oak? In terms of obviously a slower maturation, slower flavour development, hopefully get some superior results.
Hope so, James. It's so far so good. You have to be very patient, as you know, in this game. You know, we've got a really great team here. We've got a new head distiller will be starting with us, which means I'll be retiring as head distiller as of this year, which will be great. So that'll give me more time to be able to get over these casks and start really examining the flavour profiles. The early barrels that we've got, which are probably around maybe 4.5 to 5 years old at the moment, are showing really good signs. And for me, I'm relieved to say that there is a spring bayness about them. I think our new make spirit is being maintained in its flavour profile. And the quality of barrels we've got, which is one of the advantages, I think, of not being overly large, 25,000 litres a year probably puts us as about a middle-sized Tasmanian distillery. Still means we can nose every single cask and be very selective about the cask's selection that we put the spirit into. And so the early signs are we've got some very nice whiskies coming through.
And Susie, how involved are you in the production side of things? Being as interested as you are in whiskey, I'd imagine that you're getting your hands dirty as well.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I've just been mopping up a spill on the floor just before, so that's why we're a little
bit... Hopefully not just that sort of stuff.
So I am certainly in the early days, you know, Cam and I were just distilling in our spare time, and it was really weekends that we were doing it, and we would, you know, load the trailer up with the wash, take it up to the coast with the kids and the dogs, and then distill over a couple of days. I think in terms of whiskey production, we've now got some people helping us out, some great staff that are doing, you know, that for us. But I guess when it comes to, you know, all the whiskey and we're constantly, you know, our business development manager is like, oh, we desperately need some bourbon or port or whatever it is, you know, and you were like, it'll be ready in a month. And we're like, the whiskey's ready when it's ready. So, you know, and it won't be rushed. And yes, it's frustrating, but we're not going to just pull it out because, and that's probably the advantage of our size, the fact that it's just Cam and I, there's no investors. You know, we have that total ownership over what goes into the bottle, finishes, those kind of things. So, yeah, I think my role, I certainly do a fair bit up at the coast and run that. And we have a couple of great people working up there. And I'm always involved in the bottling and the labelling, certainly the tasting. We have a bit of a panel and, you know, progress reports on whiskey. So I would say I'm pretty heavily involved. Put it this way, this is what I'm doing now. I certainly don't have any other work. So
yeah, and one thing Susie didn't mention, James, is that she has an IBD certificate. So she's actually almost officially more qualified than I am. I've got a Bachelor of Science, but Susie's the only one of the two of us that's got a certificate from the IBD, so she lords that over me from time to time. So what I say, when people come to the cellar door, I say, look, because my wife's not here, I'm the owner and the head distiller. If Susie was here, I'd be the co-owner and assistant to the head distiller. And so, for example, Susie and I are the only ones that know the gin recipe, and so, you know, secret herbs and spices, we do all of that ourselves up at the coast. And, for example, I'm running the still with Susie today here at Cambridge. We're doing the cuts today. We've got a heart run coming out at the moment, which will be sort of due in about an hour or so. And so Susie and I will go and get our palates and our nose over the final cut. And Susie's always been, I think she underestimates her involvement. I think Susie's always been one of the ones who's been looking for special casks, new product development. She's got a very, very good palate, so I trust her implicitly with when we're on the tasting panel about determining ABVs and the readiness of casks. And it's one of those things, the reason that Susie and I started the distillery, we actually like distilling. And so when people ask us about a growth going forward, I mean, we've had a big step up from 5 to 25,000 litres. I sort of feel I'm pretty comfortable with our production levels at the moment, because it means that Susie and I don't become HR managers. We can still maintain a hands-on. And as Susie said, she's mopping the floor. She and I were bottling some gin this morning. So everyone in our distillery is hands-on. We're all brand ambassadors. We're all distillers and we're all floor moppers. So.
And cleaners.
Yeah, and we still enjoy it too after 8 years. So
the interesting thing is, though, being a husband and wife team, we don't always get on, as you can imagine. So they're not. I mean, I know it's hard to believe, but so there are sometimes some words about various things, I would say.
Well, you mean boardroom conflict.
Boardroom
conflict.
It's a fine line between the boardroom and the kitchen table, though, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the kitchen table is our boardroom. You've got it in one, James.
Some of the staff just look the other way. It's really funny when we start. You know, the thing for us is, as Cam said, we actually do really enjoy it. So, look, I was up yesterday and, you know, we had one of these beautiful Tassie days, blue skies. I'd just taken the dogs for a walk along the beach and then getting visitors from WA and I think Queensland. So they're struggling with it. But they were like, oh, my God, it's so stunning. And, you know, that sort of intimacy of a small cellar door, the fact that you're chatting to the owner, the maker, I think people seem to really enjoy that. We don't have to be huge to make, you know, good quality product. I don't really want us to get any bigger. I'm quite happy where we are. And I think it's great for people who want to get bigger and bigger and, you know, but at the end of the day, you're going to have to sell the product as well. So with everyone getting bigger and bigger, yeah, I guess it's about trying to find that sort of sweet spot that works as well.
Co-partnership is different from other agencies purely because we specialise in drinks.
Co-partnership is a strategic branding and packaging design agency founded by Max Harkness and Zoe Green in 2011.
We're not just designers who happen to be specialising in drinks. We're already ahead on trends in market, consumer behaviours, understanding how drinks are made, understanding the nuances of every category.
Even if you don't know the name Co-partnership, you're familiar with their work on great brands that have featured on this podcast, like Morris, St Hugo, Kate Byron, and Mr Black.
Drinks design, we believe it really does require specialisation. There's some pretty technical things that happen throughout the process of really understanding how things are made and printed and which suppliers you need to go to get things done.
Co-partnership, a proud supporter of the Drinks Adventures podcast.
Branding and packaging, it's 50% of your success, really. I think it's going to be as important as the drink itself. If you get both the branding and the product right, then that's what's going to set you up for growth and momentum.
Visit co-partnership.com to get in touch with the team.
The distilling part of the business, it's a deep personal love that we have for the products.
Bintani made its name on supplying ingredients to craft brewers, and the company has relished the opportunity to support Australia's growing craft spirits industry.
Whether it's new flavour profiles that suddenly shift the direction the gin goes in, utilising Australian wine barrels for whiskey in a way that people haven't done before, that's incredibly exciting.
Bintani offers the country's most comprehensive range of fermentables, yeast, flavours and more, with in-house experts who can help its customers create the products of their dreams.
The whiskies and the wood-aged products have a very long gestation, and when they finally hit the market, invariably they're winning awards and they're making the rest of the world sit up and take notice. It's a wonderful thing for us to be a part of.
Bintani, a proud supporter of the Drinks Adventures podcast.
There's a pretty high percentage of the staff here who have fairly good whisky libraries at home, and we really do enjoy that side of the business as much as we do craft beer.
Visit bintani.com.au to get in touch with Dale Meddings and the team.
And when you talked before about getting your hands on interesting casks, what does that entail and what are some of the sorts of casks you have in your barrel store? I know that you're particular fans of bourbon casks, ex-bourbon.
It's a very good question, James. I must say I always felt that that bourbon casks were underrated. I think we've been sort of trained as Scotch drinkers that bourbon were as an inferior maturation. And I know a lot of the premium whiskies coming out of Scotland were always sherry cask finished or had full maturation in sherry cask. But I love the flavours the bourbon can deliver. And I suppose that's one of the advantages for a young distillery. We're using a lot of first fill casks. So we're getting really good flavours. We're very selective about the bourbon casks we select. And I think we're probably also, that was, I suppose, one thing that we did early on that was different to a lot of Tasmanian distilleries is we actually went into our first few releases was actually into bourbon cask because we really wanted to try and nail that. And I think the risk, of course, is that your spirits are on show. The influence of the barrel's a lot less on your spirit than, say, a heavy fortified. So there was a risk to us because we were a bit naked with our spirit, but I sort of backed our ability to make a good quality spirit. That was quite satisfying. Like our first world gold medal winner was a bourbon cask. The Financial Review that I mentioned before put us in the top six back in 2018. That was a bourbon cask. But we do like mixing it up a little bit. I think probably our sherry casks are probably one of the most awarded. So we're quite particular about the sort of sherry casks that we get. I think the key to any distillery is actually be really good friends with your cooperages. So we've got, you know, three cooperages that we access cask from. And, you know, we're always in communication with them. Barrel program is probably one of the most important thing that a distillery does. And, you know, we've been really lucky that, you know, for example, we've got a Chateau Latour wine barrel from the East Bank of Burgundy, you know, one of the world's most expensive red wines. It's a beautiful 250-litre ex-wine cask. I think it's about 5 years old at the moment, and we're sort of hoping that it gets out to seven, and we might actually release that as our 10th birthday release in 2025. So, you know, we've got some interesting wine casks. And one thing we experimented with was really interesting is we've experimented with the virgin French oak and virgin American oak, and they've been great success for us.
And that was just purely, I mean, let's face it, we were just trying that, you know.
Yeah.
We didn't know what they were going to taste like. We just thought this will be interesting to see the comparison between the French and the American oak. And, yeah, it was just a great surprise, you know. And I think that's always exciting when you're doing these. We've approached some local vineyards to get what does Tassie do really well, we're cool climate, so the Pinots and the Chardonnays. You know, if we were doing a Shiraz wine cask, we'd probably use, you know, something from the Barossa, those kind of things. So, yeah, I think just putting that bit of thought into, again, just trying to do like, oh, I'm in a Chardonnay cask. I wish we'd filled, you know, the problem is because we're small, we had one Chardonnay barrel and that was it. And then, of course, we wait sort of 4 years down the track. Oh, that's good. But, of course, it's another few years before we...
The next one.
Till the next one. So I think we're loving just that Tasmanian wine cask expression. I'm super excited about some of the barrels that are coming out that are actually local, you know, local vineyards. So
considering like we're about to turn 8 years old this July, but I still feel like we're still a very young distillery and we're still learning.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying a lot of new things all the time. I think you sometimes get a bit bored in the shed doing the same thing over and over. So we have been experimenting.
Yeah.
And one of the really interesting things for us, as Susie said, this experimentation with virgin French and virgin American oak, it was about a learning experience of what does actually just the oak bring to our spirit without having bourbon or a port or sherry influence. So, and they actually were beautiful whiskies. And so for us, this is a really good insight into the future of our casks. So when we get, and we're starting to see some barrels coming through that are ready for a third fill. For example, with the French oak, we've lost the sherry and we've lost the port influence. We're now taking those casks and giving them a heavy shave and a heavy char, which you don't normally do a heavy char for French oak because you would lose the port or the sherry influence. But what it does, it actually makes a beautiful whiskey. And one of the new innovations we've set up here in the shed is we've actually set up a Solera system, which is four 500-litre puncheons that are stacked one on top of each other and they feed into each other. So they're actually gravity-fed from the top cask, which we fill with some of our matured spirit. And then it gravity feeds through a Chardonnay, a port, and then finishes it with two musket casks. And so far, the experimentation around that has been really interesting, and we're getting some really nice whiskey coming out of it. So that's been a lot of fun. Susie's laughing because I'm always playing with this bloody thing, but it has been a lot of fun because it is the future for some of our older casks. Because one of the greatest assets the distillery has is its wood. To get the most use out of them, I think we've found quite a good strategy going forward.
Now, you do also have, as you mentioned, the gin and also the vodka in your range, and the vodka picked up a medal, a gold medal recently, I believe. How important are those products for you guys just in terms of cash flow, and do they excite you as much as the whiskey?
That's a really good question,
James.
Yeah,
that is a good question. I mean, we started off with whiskey, and so we were a whiskey distillery. I was pretty keen to do gin, so I did need to work on CAM. It did take a little bit of convincing, shall we say. So a couple of years down the track, we did our first gin, and it took us quite a while. We made some of them, the early ones were pretty ordinary. We discovered very early that we did it in a small still first, and then when we upscaled it into a larger still, it was just completely different. So it was just all those tricky, finicky little things with gin. But for me, the really interesting thing is when people come and visit and, you know, the cellar door, there's a lot of gin drinkers. So it's so nice to be able to cover off on not just the whiskey drinkers, but also the gin drinkers. And so we just did a gin because we could, and the gin has kind of taken on its own little thing. So it's been a lot of fun, hasn't it?
Well, it's been a world of surprises. Like,
yeah.
I said to Susie, we are a single malt whiskey distillery, so we will not release the gin before the single malt's released. I don't want to fall into that trap where the distilleries get known for their gin and then all of a sudden put a whiskey out into the market. So, you know, she agreed with that and we released our first whiskey in October 2017, but the gin was released September 2017. Susie got in there a month early. But, you know, it was one of those things. People knew our story and they knew we were a single malt whiskey distillery that also makes gin. You know, it wasn't really necessarily a cash flow thing. That's where I'm sure a lot of distilleries start with gin. Susie's got a long heritage of family that are gin drinkers from the UK. And so she wanted to make her own gin. So, you know, she owns half the still. I couldn't stop her.
I mean, the problem is, you know, on my side of the family, my father was a whiskey drinker, but they're all gin drinkers. And so it would always be like, oh, when are you going to make a gin? It was never come and have a wine. It was always come for a gin and tonic, my granny would say, you know. Yeah. So I thought it would just be great to make something that they'll actually enjoy. And you've got to admit your mum as well. I mean, I think our whiskey goes into her Christmas cake.
Yeah.
And that's about it. You know, she doesn't like whiskey, but she'll enjoy the gin.
Look, the gin's been a pleasant surprise, James. And it's one of those things that we've had so many pinch me moments when we started winning medals for our gin, as well as the whiskey. You know, we suddenly felt like, I think we know what we're doing. You know, it was one of those things, if we can pull off a good gin and a good whiskey, it shows that our influence on the products, which is the distilling process, we're obviously doing something right. And I think that gave us a lot of confidence going forward. And so when our distributor said to us, you know, they don't have a premium vodka in their portfolio, can you please make us one?
Mm-hmm.
I remember our distiller at the time said, well, you know, I'm not making vodka. And I said, well, you are. And so we went into coming up with a recipe of our vodka. And what we decided to use, we used a bit of our malt spirit as the base. We used Australian premium wheat spirit for the remainder and, of course, cut back with our rainwater. And then we run it through an activated carbon filter. Instead of four times, as normally done to strip out all the flavour, we only run it through once just to integrate all of the ingredients. The effect was that it's still a full-flavoured vodka. It's got a creaminess, sort of vanilla and marshmallow. And everyone seems to start enjoying it. And when we entered it into the first World Whiskey Awards this year, blow me down if we didn't win Best Australian Varietal Vodka. So at the world,
yeah, the category world. Winner. That was a really nice surprise.
You could have knocked us down with a feather. Mm. But what it's really good is it's a really interesting thing when people come to the distillery to actually give them a glass of our vodka, which, you know, the basis of is our new make spirit, and of course it's got our rainwater in it. It's actually a great way of telling the story of the distillery. And we've actually converted quite a few people across to drinking vodka as a result of that. So we're very proud of that. And I think, you know, having our first spirit that actually was matured and bottled out of our still here in Cambridge was actually a brandy. We used some wine to condition the still and season the still. And our brandy's just won a silver medal at the International World Spirits Competition. So I don't know whether there are any other distilleries in Australia that won global medals for brandy, gin, vodka and single malt whiskey, but we'd be in a pretty small group, I reckon.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what you said before about the concerns of becoming known for something else before you even released your whiskey, you know, I think that's a very real concern. But then on the other hand, I think you've got to be pragmatic about it when you're running a tourism business. Giving people more reasons to come and visit you is just, it's common sense really, isn't it?
Yeah. Put it this way, I've got no regrets about making gin or vodka.
So when your expanded production volumes come online, you know, how do you see your range evolving? Will you have the economies of scale to sort of bring something to market a little bit more accessibly priced?
The constant question that keeps us up at night and keeps Susie and I talking over the kitchen table. Well, one good thing, I spoke about our Solera system, which is potentially going to be quite a big volume whiskey for us into 700 mil. Because we've actually written off the casks that we're actually maturing this whiskey in, as I said, these are sometimes our third fill or even fourth fill casks, and we're shaving them, heavy charring them, putting them through the Solera system, the actual cost of production for those whiskies have actually come down. So we're looking at releasing later this year a 700 ml bottle for mid-100s. Normally we're priced up around just under 200 for our core range, our single cask series. So we will be releasing, and I think for us, as we develop, we'll probably end up with a bit of a broader broader spread of price. Although my commitment to all the whiskey drinkers out there, we're going to stay in 700ml bottles. the only 500ml bottles we do is very small releases. Like Susie mentioned, a Shiraz cask that we use from the Barossa, that was 60 bottles. So they go into 500ml, but that's the only time we'll touch them.
A lot of people do hate 500ml bottles, don't they?
there's not enough whiskey in them, James. Yeah.
Anything else coming up other than that Solera release is going to be a bit later in the year, it sounds like?
Do you know what? I'm actually really excited for the Madeira. What was that one we tried the other day?
Oh, Madeira cask.
The Madeira cask, yeah. It's not actually even officially whiskey, but that is just shaping. Like I was thinking, oh, my God, I'd probably bottle this now.
Yeah, no, it's super sweet. It's like a dessert whiskey. And yeah. I remember we gave it, when we put it in front of the tasting panel when it was 18 months old, didn't tell anyone what it was. One of the guys in the shed goes, oh, God, that's ready
that's
now.
That's ready. And we're like, oh, it's not even
it's only 18 months old. Yeah. So, but it had such beautiful sweetness to it. We've got a few of those.
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting. We've just invested in a large quantity of some super premium sherry casks from Spain. You know, these normally we can pick up a Australian sherry 200-litre barrel for about $1,000. These are about $2,000 each. So a huge investment from us. But for us, you know, this is the sort of the future whiskey that, you know, in the next sort of 8 years, these super premium sherry casks will be coming out. So we take our cask investment very seriously and, you know, we might even be doing some, might even have to make some rum so we can treat some of our old barrels with some rum to, because some of our rum releases have been pretty good too. I've really enjoyed them.
Actually, what's that one we've got? It's flocking at the moment. It's bourbon. It's rum finish.
Yeah, it's an American oak rum cask, and it was only a little 20, but it was a lot of fun. It's delicious.
Hmm.
Yeah, so, you know.
Bits and pieces.
Yeah, we've got a few bits and pieces coming through. There's probably some casks in there, James, I've forgotten about. You know, I put them down 3 or 4 years ago. We're actually just moving a lot of our casks around at the moment. We had to build some more barrel racks. Always a nice problem in the distillery to need more space for barrels. So we're just doing a full inventory at the moment. So I'll certainly get back to you if anything catches my eye.
Have you got plenty of room there to grow and keep putting barrels down?
No. The sheds are never big enough, mate.
I think that's a common problem, isn't it, when you've got to store barrels. But, you know, I remember when we actually bought this place, we bought one warehouse and I said to Cam, you know, the one next door is for sale as well. And we thought, oh, yeah, we might get that because we could maybe rent it out. Thank God we did because it's incredible how you just fill the space. Mm. It just doesn't seem to take very long. I mean, we've only been here since... 2019?
Yeah.
So what's that, 4 years? And
shed's full.
Yeah, the shed's full. We're running out of room at a rapid rate.
Yeah. We've been busy, James.
Good to hear. Well, I look forward to coming down and one of these days and seeing it with my own eyes. Cam and Susie, been a really fascinating chat. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for inviting us.
Thanks for having us, James. Looking forward to having you in the shed, mate.